Chapter 28. Haifa, Israel, February 1949. The sun is shining as the gangplank is lowered to cheers of excitement and whispered prayers of thanks. It's cool, but not cold. The port of Haifa swells with the new arrivals and quayside spectators. Magda views the milling crowds with a sense of wonder. So many Jews, and no one is about to round them up and put them on a train for their beliefs. They will finally be able to proclaim their names and bear their arms without fear of reprisal or the taunts of anti-Semites. "Magda," whispers Livy, "are you ready?" She is gripping her sister's arm. If she lets go, she might float away, up into the sky. But then the weight in her pocket slams her back down to earth. "Do you think we'll be searched before we get off the boat?" "No idea," says Magda. "But if we are, then we're all going overboard and we will have to swim to port." Livy starts to laugh and begins to tell Magda that would be a pity when the words dry in her throat.
"Smart girl. You kept your mouth shut,"
jeers Isaac, standing before them. Livy instantly feels the familiar dread, the pressure on her bladder, the fear, exhaustion and misery of the camp. Her hand is in her pocket, but instead of the gun, her fingers close around the small knife. She withdraws it slowly and holds it by her side. Isaac doesn't move. His eyes flick to the knife, to the other passengers crowding the deck. "If I scream now," Livy tells him in a low voice, "who do you think my brothers and sisters will believe? You or me?"
"Don't be a fool," he hisses.
"Let's try it, shall we?" Magda says, lifting her chin. Isaac's eyes are suddenly wide and wild. He holds up his hands and backs away.
"Where are you going?"
says Livy, raising her voice. But the capo has turned round and is running for the gangplank.
"You know, Livy," says Magda, "I almost wish you'd done it."
"What? Stabbed him or called for help?"
"Both."
Now Magda places her hands on her sister's shoulders. "That is the last we'll ever see that guy, Livy. We are not bringing him to Israel with us. Take a final look as he runs away, and then we'll forget him." Livy is breathing hard. The memories are threatening to rear up again, but she nods, wishing that Isaac was the only thing she had to let go of. From the top of the gangplank, they look down at the dock, wanting to fix this picture in their minds forever. Before they can take a step, a young man pushes past them. Livy tenses, but it's just a boy in a hurry to get ashore.
"Sorry," he mutters.
Livy is surprised to see it's the lone peacock.
"It's okay," she says, grinning.
The boy winks at her, and then he's swallowed up by the crowds of men and women spilling off the ship onto the dock.
"Ready?"
asks Magda. With a case each, their arms linked, Magda and Livy step in time down the ramp, pausing at the bottom.
"Now,"
says Livy. As the sisters step onto dry land for the first time in a week, tears spilling down their cheeks, their faces are turned not to the sun, but to the ground beneath their feet. Standing in the crowd on the quay are two men dressed in military-style uniform, their berets bearing the insignia of wings around a Star of David. They wave to the peacock boys, who follow them to a truck adorned with the same insignia.
"Must be the Air Force," Magda says.
"Israel has an Air Force already?" Livy asks. But they don't have time to ponder this or the peacock boys any further, as the new Israelis are called to line up for registration and the allocation of a new home. Magda and Livy are aboard an open truck with other men and women, driving through the streets of Haifa. The people on the pavements wave and cheer their arrival, and everyone aboard the truck waves and cheers right back. On the outskirts of the town, the sisters marvel at the huge groves of orange trees. The air is heavy with their sharp, sweet aroma. They are a little way out of Haifa when the truck turns off the road and onto a rough track, which they bounce along for a good half hour. They pull up inside a small compound of huts and barns, a clearing within an abundant orange grove. A man emerges from one of the huts and watches the men and women clamber out of the vehicle.
Shalom aleichem.
He is smiling, spreading his arms wide to welcome the travellers. Aleichem shalom, they call back.
Welcome to Israel. Welcome to Hadera. Welcome to your kibbutz. Thank you for making the dangerous journey to be here, to be part of the founders of your new home.
The men and women gather around him. Magda holds Livy's hand, and Livy shakes her off. Too tight, she says, and Magda takes her arm instead.
My name is Menachem. I am the supervisor and your friend,
the man continues.
As you can see, you are standing in an orange grove. Right now, there are no oranges to pick, but there is plenty of work to do as we prepare for picking season. I want you to spend your time here getting to know one another. You are the future of this land. Respect her, and she will look after you.
He points to the huts.
This is where you'll live.
Menachem gives them a wry smile.
Boys on one side, girls on the other. But should you meet in the middle, well, so be it. Over there are the kitchens and dining area where some of you will work, because I'm not going to cook and clean for you. Now, go and find yourself a place to call home, and I'll see you at dinner.
When will we know it's dinner time? A voice pipes up.
Ah, someone who thinks about his stomach. Good. You can only work and play if you are well fed. To answer your question, there is a large cowbell outside the kitchen, which you'll all hear when it's time to eat. Now go.
He has father's name, says Magda. It's a good sign, isn't it?
Livy is staring at the supervisor. The girls and boys are all heading towards the huts, but the sisters haven't moved. Menachem, too, has not moved.
Shalom, ladies. Is everything all right?
Everything is wonderful. It's just...
Livy stammers.
Go on.
You have our father's name, she says shyly.
I am honored to have the same name as your father. And what are your names?
I'm Livy, and this is my sister, Magda.
Menachem glances at the girl's arms.
Show me,
he asks. Magda holds out her arm, and they both inspect the tattoo.
Livy, Magda, you are both safe here, and I am honored to meet you. If there is anything you need, please come and find me. Promise me you will.
We will, Magda says.
As the sisters walk away, Livy is still solemn.
Are you okay, kitten?
Magda asks her. Was that upsetting?
I wish we could remove them, Magda, says Livy. I wish I could cut my arm off.
Magda lays an arm around Livy's shoulders. And give the Nazis our limbs, too.
They've taken enough. Are you happy, Magda, that we're here?
I just want to feel safe again, Livy. And isn't that just what Menachem promised?
Magda, wake up! Wake up!
One of their four roommates is hovering over Magda's bed. It is still dark outside, but the moon is out, throwing pale white light over the figures asleep beneath their blankets. The camp is quiet.
What is it?
Magda asks, disorientated, drowsy.
It's your sister. She's crying and calling out. I think she needs you.
Now Magda hears the muttering, the sobbing from her sister's bed. She is out of bed in moments, crossing the room.
Sibby! Sibby, where are you?
Livy is repeating over and over as she twists and turns under her covers.
Livy, it's all right, I'm here.
Magda sits down on Livy's bed and takes her shoulders.
You're okay, Livy. I need Sibby. I need Sibby,
moans Livy.
It's Sibby, Livy, right here.
The other girls in the room are all awake now, sitting up in their beds, watching the exchange between the sisters. Magda wraps Livy in her arms. Livy seems to hear Magda's words as her body relaxes and she falls back to sleep, and Magda climbs into bed with her. The next morning, Livy is perplexed to find her sister asleep beside her. She shakes her awake. "Why are you in my bed?" Magda, once again, wakes up disoriented. For a moment, she too has no idea why she's there, and then she remembers. "You had a bad dream, that's all," she tells Livy, "and I thought a cuddle would help." Livy gets out of bed and heads for bathrooms in the hut next door to theirs. "I had a sister who used to sleep-talk and cry out." The roommate who had woken Magda is moving around the room, picking up the clothes she dropped the night before. "My mother said it was best if we never told her about it." "Maybe you're right," sighs Magda. "Who's Sibby?" "She's our older sister. She and her family will be here soon."
"And Livy is close to her?"
"Very. They were in Auschwitz together for nearly 3 years."
"What about you? I've seen the number on your arm."
"I came later. Much later. I didn't go through half what they did." The girl lays her dirty clothes on her bed and crosses the room to give Magda a hug. "Livy will be fine. We're all one family now."
"And you? Do you have anyone here?"
"I don't." The girl frowns and turns away to look out of the windows at the glorious sunshine. "They're all dead, and I don't know how or even why I survived. But I did." The frown is gone as quickly as it had appeared, and now she's smiling. "We owe it to those who died to live our best lives, become our best selves, and here we can." Livy bursts into the hut, her arms flung around the shoulders of two girls. "Magda, look who I found," she squeals. Magda looks at the girls, who are holding on to Livy as if they will never let her go. "Who have you found, Livy?"
"It's Shari and Nelly. They're sisters too. We were in Auschwitz together. They worked in the Canada."
Shari and Nelly extend their hands to Magda. "We heard so much about you," Shari says. "Livy and Sibby talked about their family all the time. I am so happy they found you." "And Sibby will be here soon," Magda tells them. "Any day now." The four girls head for the kitchen for their first breakfast on their first day in their new land. Magda and Livy settle into the routine of life on a kibbutz and begin to learn Hebrew, the language of their new country. They attend talks given by officials from Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, where they learn of the plans to turn Israel into a home for Jews across the world. They will fill the country with businesses and babies. They will remember the dead and celebrate the living. They will never forget, but they must also live their best lives. Much of this feels inspiring to the sisters, but often, at the end of one of these talks, Livy feels very small, too small to be charged with the monumental task of creating a new homeland on behalf of all those who were murdered. But Magda is more hopeful.
"You're just missing Sibby," she reassures her.
"She's coming, Livy, and when she gets here, we can stop worrying about her." The task they are most devoted to is their Sunday evening ritual, when they sit down to write to Sibby. Livy's letters beseech Sibby to come soon, that there is so much there for her to love, but she must hurry, while Magda's are more practical, containing lists of things that would be useful in this new climate. Sibby writes back to tell them that she, Mishka and Carol will be arriving in May. With Sibby's arrival date on the horizon, Livy's mood is better. She begins to feel the past receding, just a little, with each day she spends in the orange groves, amongst the trees, watching the fruit grow, their hues shifting from green to pale yellow to brilliant orange. The first fruit she picks makes her face pucker as she tastes its bitter juice, but she drinks it down just the same. "Too soon," Menachem tells her with a grin.
Another month, young Livy.
Eventually the large trucks arrive. It is time to pick the oranges. Everyone is shown how to secure the wicker baskets to their bodies, and they march into the fields, line up in front of the rows of trees, and begin to pick oranges. It's not supposed to be a race, but Livy can't help herself. She is the first in the kibbutz to haul an overflowing basket to the sorting shed. The sisters collapse into bed straight after dinner during picking season. The long days have robbed them of any desire to socialize, and it is the same for everyone. But 4 weeks later, when the last orange is plucked from the final tree, they are allowed a week off. They can go to Haifa or stay and recuperate on the farm. The sisters stay where they are, enjoying the silence of the empty fruit groves, a silence which is soon shattered by cries of delirious excitement when Sibby's letter arrives, informing them of her departure date.
"We'll be together again, Magda," says Livy, waving the letter in the air. "The Mellor sisters in one place, just as they should be. She says they're sailing from Italy. Didn't you once want to go to Italy?"
"Did I?" Magda can't recall wanting anything for years other than her sister's safety.
"You did, but never mind. Hopefully Sibby won't decide to stay there.
I wish we knew more about their trip.
You know they can't put too much in their letters."
Livy opens her eyes comically wide.
"There are eyes everywhere," she booms.
Magda laughs and mimics her expression.
"Spies everywhere."
But then she seems to deflate, the joke over.
"This place, though? Can they really come here? There aren't even any children on the kibbutz. Can we worry about that later?"
Livy folds the letter and puts it in her pocket.
"Don't spoil it just yet."
"Just how much have you packed, Sibby?"
Mishka sighs, looking at the three open suitcases on their bed, brimming with clothes, books, toys, and, sticking out of the sleeve of a winter coat, Chaya's precious candlesticks.
"What would you have me leave behind? Carrie's toys?
Your clothes?" Sibby says with a pout. "We can buy Carrie more toys in Israel. I can make him more toys. But at least let's leave behind his enormous yellow truck.
Can we take his train at least? You made it, and he would be heartbroken to leave it here."
"The train can stay, but not the truck, and only two books. The others we can give to your uncle's children."
Reluctantly, Sibby removes the wooden yellow truck and several books from one of the suitcases.
"I will only take one extra pair of shoes," Sibby says,
examining the two pairs she has packed, deciding which to discard.
"And food? For the journey?"
She doesn't intend to stuff tins of sardines in between her son's toys, but the inclination to is strong.
"Again, not too much. We're not abandoning civilization, you know. We can buy what we need as we go," says Mishka.
"Uncle Ivan will be here in the morning to help us, so he can take anything we don't want."
"Will Irinka be with him?"
"No. He's coming alone. He said he'd be much more useful if he was on his own. And anyway, their baby is so small still."
Sibby looks wistful for a moment.
"Hopefully he will join us very soon, and then the whole family will be together."
Only the whole family will never be together again, thinks Sibby. Packing these suitcases has returned her to an earlier time, one she would rather forget, where she and her mother had carefully gathered clothes for two small suitcases that she and Livy were never to lay eyes on again once they had entered Auschwitz.
"What do you want to do today? We should mark it. Our last day in the country of our birth," Mishka says.
Sibby pushes aside the discarded books, sits on the bed and sighs deeply.
"You don't think we'll ever come back?"
"I don't know. Maybe for a visit."
Mishka sits beside his wife and puts his arm around her. She leans into him.
When Carrie wakes up, let's put him in his pram and go for a walk. I think that's how I'd like to say goodbye, with one last stroll around town. Slowly, the small family makes its way through the streets of Bratislava. Sibby sees the chocolate shop where Livy had once been humiliated for having the audacity to buy a treat. It was the incident which broke the camel's back, thinks Sibby. It broke all our backs. She's ready to say goodbye. Let's go home, shall we? She says to Mishka, who turns the pram round. Uncle Ivan struggles with the pram, all too aware of the bus driver huffing and sighing as he waits to load it into the back of the bus with the rest of their luggage. Mishka, Carrie in his arms, is trying to stifle his giggles as he and Sibby watch Ivan fumbling and cursing. Give him a hand, Sibby, please. Put him out of his misery, Mishka says eventually. Ivan holds up his hands in surrender, and Sibby takes the pram and hands it to the bus driver in a single swift manoeuvre. Ivan shakes hands with Mishka, pats Carrie on the head, and opens his arms for his niece. Irinka, the children and I will be with you before you know it, he says. We won't rest until we're together again, whispers Sibby, and safe. This bus is leaving with or without you, the bus driver grumbles. Sibby, Mishka, and even Carrie wave at Ivan until he is out of sight. On Sibby's lap, Carrie is glued to the window, transfixed by the buildings, the cars, and the people outside. Say goodbye, little baby, thinks Sibby. We're going on an adventure. A big adventure, too. They have borders to cross, documents to be examined, and questions answered before they reach and cross Italy, where a ship awaits them in Genoa for their passage to Haifa. It's the questions to be answered that gnaw at Sibby. She has had her fill of army officials in spotless uniforms standing between her and her freedom. How long before we get to the border? Sibby asks in a small voice. They are the only ones with so much luggage. It's obvious to everyone on the bus that they're trying to leave the country. With a defiant tilt of the head, Sibby meets the glares of some of the other passengers aboard, who muttered Jew under their breaths as she and Mishka move down the bus. Which border? Mishka asks. Austria. Our first test. Not long. Half an hour? Depends how many stops we make. We'll be fine because we have all the right documents. Will you stop worrying? Sibby squeezes the handles of her handbag, their future contained therein, government documents granting them permission to migrate to Israel. Good riddance, the town hall official had said when he handed them over. But Sibby hadn't cared. She'd felt the same about him. Two stops later, the bus is pulling in behind a line of cars and trucks at the border between Czechoslovakia and Austria. Sibby's pulse quickens when she spots the armed soldiers walking up and down the rows of vehicles. Their brown uniforms, while simple and unadorned with medals, nevertheless send a shiver down her spine. Instinctively she clutches Kari to her chest. He lets out a cry, and Sibby releases him. Beyond the barrier, she sees the Austrian soldiers wandering along the rows of vehicles waiting to enter Czechoslovakia. The barrier is raised and lowered, and very slowly the vehicles begin to inch forwards. Sibby watches as most of the cars are waved through the border, but notes, with a growing sense of dread, that some are being turned back. Finally, the doors of the bus slide open, and two soldiers step aboard, one heading for the back of the bus and the other starting at the front. Knowing what to expect, all the passengers have their documents ready and hand them to the officials when requested. Sibby passes their papers to Mishka, who offers them to the approaching soldier. Carrie squeals with happiness while they are being examined. The soldier offers the baby a smile before saying, "Yuda," to Mishka. "Yes, we are moving to Israel," Mishka tells him. "Why? Don't you want to live in the country of your birth?"
The man has a steady gaze, and Sibby wants to slap it off his face.
"Would you want to stay here after what we've been through?" she wants to scream.
"The only family we have left are in Israel, and we want to be with them," Mishka tells him, with an equally steady gaze.
"Good luck."
The soldier hands the documents back, and they have passed the first test. Sibby closes her eyes, exhales, unaware she had been holding her breath. Mishka settles back in his seat and offers Sibby a small, triumphant smile. Across the border, the Austrian soldiers insist on checking the paperwork for their transit from Genoa to Haifa, and then warn them to proceed with haste through Austria. They have no visa permitting them to stay in the country for even a single day. Sibby scrambles to produce the train tickets for Vienna to Spielfeld later that day.
"And from there?"
Sibby hands over further train tickets, from Spielfeld through Yugoslavia to Trieste in Italy. But, she notes, her heart sinking, this journey is not until tomorrow.
"Where do you plan to spend tonight?" asks the soldier.
"We'll sleep at the station, so we can be on the first train out of Austria tomorrow morning," Mishka told him.
"Well, you had better not miss it."
An hour later, the bus stops at the Hauptzollamt train station close to the city centre. Sibby and Mishka collect their luggage and strap Carrie into his pram. They have a little time before their train, and Sibby insists Mishka finds a place to deposit their cases while they look around.
"It's a food hall," gasps Sibby.
They are standing in front of a vast building filled with stall upon stall of tempting foods. Sibby has never seen so much food. Cheeses, breads, meat and poultry. She wants to buy it all, and proceeds to devour every sample offered by every trader as they make their way up and down the rows of laden tables. In the end, Sibby buys a selection of her favourite things, enough to last them the few days until they reach the Italian port, from where they will sail away from Europe, perhaps forever. Back in the railway station, Sibby settles Kari into his pram to sleep and stretches out on the bench, her head in Mishka's lap, to doze before the next leg of their journey. Mishka watches over them. The next morning, their train arrives on time, and the second test looms. Sibby, Mishka and Kari wait on the platform for officials to arrive and process their entry into Yugoslavia. Sibby feels the tension flood her body, but takes long, calming breaths.
"We'll be fine, Sibby," Mishka tries to reassure her. "Look, they're barely even looking at the papers."
Mishka is right. The officials are offering only cursory glances at the documents of the boarding passengers. Finally, it is their turn, and Sibby hands over their papers and train tickets for their journey to a uniformed official.
"What is this?"
the official says, waving their papers at them after attempting to read a language he obviously can't speak. While Sibby has no knowledge of Yugoslavian, Mishka knows enough to recognise there is a problem.
"Do you speak German?" Mishka asks.
"Ja."
Mishka tells him where they have come from and where they are going, while Kari begins to fuss, insisting he be allowed out of his pram.
"The little one is in a hurry to get going," says the guard, patting the baby on the head.
"Yes, we all are," says Sibby.
"Then you had all better get on board. The train is about to leave."
"Thank God for Kari," says Sibby, collapsing into her seat.
"No one likes a crying baby."
4 hours later, they arrive at a small station on the outskirts of Trieste. Two soldiers wearing the pale blue berets and uniform of the United Nations climb onto the train and begin to check the passengers' papers. Once again, Sibby is reassured that the papers are handed back to the other travellers without question, until their own are inspected. The men pass the papers back and forth between them.
"Speak German?"
Mishka asks, for the second time that day.
"Ja, but you are not German."
As Mishka outlines their travel itinerary, Sibby can tell his answers are not what they want to hear. The men step aside to speak in low voices.
You cannot continue on to Trieste, they are told. You must collect your luggage and leave with us now.
But Sibby doesn't move. We have permission to migrate, she insists, pointing at the documents. She is suddenly very hot. It is legal, and we're leaving.
Miss, please calm yourself. All migrants to Israel are being held while we assess the rightful territory of Trieste. Currently, it is a disputed area.
The soldier smiles, but Sibby is not reassured.
The United Nations is not your enemy, but we need further clearance before you can proceed.
Sibby is uncomfortably aware of the other passengers' impatience as she and Mishka unload their luggage, and this only further intensifies her ire. What's a small delay to these people when the future of her family hangs in the balance? After a short ride in the soldier's white jeep, they arrive in Trieste, pulling up outside the United Nations headquarters, and are shown inside to a large, airy office, while their documents are removed for inspection.
May we offer you some food or coffee? Milk for the little one.
But Sibby waves away their hospitality. She is thinking only of her sisters now. They are waiting for her, and these people are standing in her way.
We don't have tickets from Trieste to Genoa, Mishka,
Sibby whispers when they are alone in the room.
We should have tried harder to buy them.
The couple had assumed it would be easy enough to buy bus or train tickets for the last leg of their land-bound journey, but this oversight is now their downfall. An official comes back into the room.
How did you imagine you would cross from Yugoslavia into Italy without a visa or rite of passage? He asks them,
to which they have no reply.
We've been fools, thinks Sibby, and all the while we thought we were so clever.
They have been escorted to the dining room, but Sibby can't eat or drink a thing. Her stomach is in knots. Magda and Livy are waiting for them. Her thoughts are spiralling, she knows, but there is little she can do about it.
Sibby, the last thing we need right now is for you to fall apart, insists Mishka, handing her a cup of coffee. She takes it and gulps, scalding her tongue.
One of the blue berets is approaching their table, and Sibby sits up straight, desperate to hear the news that they may proceed with their journey.
I can't find an Italian senior officer to consult with, he tells them. They will need to grant you entry.
And if they don't? Asks Sibby, feeling the last ounces of her energy drain away. The blue beret looks at his feet.
Then you will have to go home.
Home?
Explodes Sibby. She shrugs off her coat, her cardigan, and pulls up the sleeve of her jumper, thrusting her tattooed arm under his nose.
This is what happened to me at home, she tells him.
The officer's face falls as he studies her arm.
I am so sorry, he says.
Mishka pulls down Sibby's sleeve and puts an arm around her shoulders, drawing her close.
We have been through too much already, he tells the officer. Please help us.
Madam, sir, we will not resolve this today.
The officer has regained his composure, but he addresses them with more kindness now.
Tonight you will be our guests.
But there is no sleeping to be done. Their bedroom, on the upper floor of the headquarters, is stuffy, and Kari isn't happy, despite the fuss that is made of him in the dining room at supper.
We just need to get through the night, Mishka tells Sibby.
But Sibby can't so much as blink. Everything hangs in the balance, in the hands of anonymous officials who have no idea what they have endured to come this far.
I need to be with my sisters, and I will use Auschwitz and Birkenau and the death of my mother to get to Israel, says Sibby.
The next morning, back in the dining room for breakfast, the senior officer has arrived, and now he takes a seat at their table.
Here are your tickets, he says,
handing Sibby an envelope containing tokens for the 14-hour bus ride from Trieste to Genoa, where they will have to wait until their ship is ready to sail. To cover this, there is also a voucher for 2 nights' accommodation.
The hotel is very close to the port. This little one must be eager to get home, he says, offering Kari a warm smile. Sibby's eyes fill with grateful tears, and Mishka takes her hand. The kindness of others, she thinks. When did she forget such gestures were still possible? She looks around the room, catching the smiles and nods of good luck from everyone present. We are all keen to get home, Mishka says. And soon they are speeding through the Italian countryside, the first blooms of summer wishing them well as they speed by. They pass through small towns and tiny villages, through the cities of Venice and Verona, and then onto the coast. At last, Sibby sets eyes on the dazzling blue of the Mediterranean and the ships docked in the port. Which is ours? She wonders. The Independence. A good name for a ship, because that's how she feels in this moment, independent and free to proceed to the promised land. On the day of their departure, hundreds of other passengers materialize from the edges of the town to join them. Sibby and Mishka hold hands as they walk up the gangplank to their future, Kari in Sibby's arms. On the deck of the Independence, the couple watch the waves roll away. Sibby is as calm as the waters that carry them. Mishka's arm is around her waist, while Kari sits on his shoulders.
I'm coming, dear sisters. I'm coming, whispers Sibby to the setting sun.
After the week's break, the sisters' work in the orange groves is easier. They make sure the trees are healthy, ready for another abundant crop the following year. With summer edging ever closer, the weather is warmer and the sisters revel in the heat. Lying on their backs day after day, they gaze at the beauty of Mount Carmel, its slopes featuring a lush oasis of vegetation. Livy wonders if they will ever walk its limestone ridge. Maybe one day. They are lying in the shade on the day Menachem appears by their side with news, a broad grin on his face. We've just had word that the next ship will be here in 2 days. That's your sister's ship, isn't it? The girls sit up.
The Independence!
Livy is now on her feet.
That's right.
What's the date? I've lost track of time.
Magda is still dazed from the heat, but now she too stands up.
The 15th of May. The ship is docking on the 17th.
Then we need to go to Haifa. We need to be there when they arrive.
Livy gasps. Slow down, Livy. He said 2 days. Haifa is an hour away.
But how will we get there?
You will be there to meet the ship. I'll organize it, Menachem assures them. But you should know that all migrants are now taken to a camp in Sha'a Chalia. It's not far from here. Don't worry. They'll have health checks and registration. It's just a precaution, and I'm told most people are only there for 2 or 3 days.
The sisters are instantly despondent. They had wanted to pick Sibby up from the port and bring her to the orange groves. Livy has been dreaming about taking Carol up and down the rows of trees in the early evening, beneath a brilliant red sky. Now she will have to wait even longer. The dock looks different, Magda observes. Barricades have been erected to separate the new arrivals from the locals. Magda and Livy position themselves by a barrier close to the point where the gangplank will drop. As they watch the Independence sail into the port, Livy and Magda scan the faces of all those on the decks. The docking is painfully slow, but finally the new migrants to Israel are streaming onto the quay.
They won't be first, Livy,
warns Magda, as Livy attempts to climb the barricade. She yanks her back down.
Have some patience or you'll get us in trouble.
They have a baby, remember? They're not going to risk having him hurt in the crush. Buses are lined up on the docks to take the new migrants to Sha'a Aliya. Men, women and children climb aboard, eager and excited to get on with this first stage of their new lives in the promised land.
They're taking forever, Livy moans.
No, they're not,
says Magda, her voice breaking. They're here! Sibby has spotted them on her way down the ramp, and now she hands Carol to Mishka and sprints through the crowd towards her sisters. Sibby falls into their arms, heedless of the thin wire of the barrier between them. None of the women speak for a long time. Mishka watches in silence, too overwhelmed by the sight of his wife's reunion with her sisters to say a word. It is Carol's grizzling in the end that wrenches the sisters apart. Livy wipes away Mishka's tears while Magda strokes the cheeks of her baby nephew.
Thank God you're here, Magda says.
He had nothing to do with it, Magda, Sibby replies. Magda and Mishka exchange a glance. Mishka smiles. Nothing has changed where Sibby and God are concerned.
We have to have health checks, Sibby says, sighing. But it's not for long, Sibby. Just a day or two, and we'll be here when you get out.
Move along. Come on, you can't stay here, a voice calls,
but it is the kind voice of an official who has just watched this tender encounter.
The candlesticks! Have you got the candlesticks and the photos? Magda calls out as Sibby is led away.
Yes, Magda, I have the candlesticks and photos. They are in my bag. I promise I will give them to you as soon as I can. We'll see you in a couple of days, Livy tells her sister.
Better make it three, the official says.
Two,
insists Livy, said with a grin.
Two it is, then.
Magda and Livy watch until the bus carrying their sister is out of sight. After dinner, Magda and Livy corner Menachem and ask him to take a walk with them outside. Boys and girls wander through the trees hand in hand. Excited chatter from the dining hall reaches every corner of the kibbutz. It is like this most evenings, and the sisters will miss it.
We're thinking of leaving, Livy tells him.
She wants to feel sad about it, but she can't. More than anything, she needs to be with both of her sisters.
It's lovely here, and if it wasn't for Sibby, we'd stay.
Magda picks up a leaf from the ground. She breaks it in half and holds the citrus smell to her nose. The evening is warm, almost too warm, but it's still cooler than being inside. This is a wonderful place, but it's not for families.
I understand, says Menachem. I'll be sad to see you go. Do you know where?
Not really, says Magda. We were hoping you could help us with that, too.
Menachem laughs and thinks for a moment.
There is an area, about 100 kilometers from here, called Kfar Ahim. It's where a lot of migrants are choosing to settle and start farming. You could be part of something special there.
2 days later, Magda and Livy are standing outside the quarantine facility with the car and driver provided by Menachem. Their father's namesake has come through for them. The sisters talk incessantly on the way to Kfar Ahim, but Carol won't stop crying, unable to settle in the heat. Mishka is the only one who is quiet, taking in the noise and the scenery with a big smile on his face. The government has assured all new migrants they will be housed, and now the family stand before a row of identical, prefabricated dwellings, each with 2 small bedrooms, a kitchen, and bathroom. Inside their allotted accommodation, Sibby and Mishka take their cases into one room, and Magda and Livy take theirs to the other. Instead of half the world, the only thing that stands between the siblings now is a thin wall. They are together again. Kfar Ahim, with a population of 200, is an emerging farming town, its fertile land perfect for growing and processing oranges. The sisters are soon back on familiar territory, working amongst the orange groves. Mishka finds work too, and soon he and Sibby and Carol move into a small one-bedroom home, only a few streets away from the sisters, with enough land to start their own farm. The sisters watch the town grow, and, as migrants continue to arrive, the need for accommodation grows. When Livy hears the local authority is asking for volunteers to help build new homes,
she and Magda immediately put themselves forward. "I'm going to help too," says Sibby when she hears the news. "I want to give something back to Israel for taking us in."
"But you've got Carol," Livy reminds her.
"I will find someone to watch him." For 3 days a week, Sibby joins her sisters at the building site. They aren't the only women, they are pleased to discover. Dressed in trousers and shirts, the sisters get to work. More than once, Livy and Sibby exchange a glance, and even a tear, as they recall their jobs at Auschwitz and Birkenau. The bricks, the mortar, the rubble. It is complicated. But over time, and in the company of so many new faces and new stories, the sharp edges of their brutal recollections dull a little. Long lines of women form to pass the bricks all the way to the construction site. The first brick is picked up by the first woman in line and passed on to the next, who receives it with the words, "Kusunom, Hungary." "Dziękuję, Ukraine," says the next. And so it goes on, each woman saying thank you in her mother tongue and then the country of origin.
Blagodarieci, Bulgaria. Dankeja, Netherlands. Valati, Bosnia. Jakuem, Slovakia, says Sibby. Ifaristo, Greece. Dikuki, Czech. Spasibo, Russian.
When they take their break, the women gather around to admire the work of the bricklayers as the first foundations go up. Sibby tells the story of another construction site, this time in Poland, where she and Livy had helped to build Birkenau. Sitting on an empty crate, Livy is shivering as Sibby speaks, feeling a sudden chill despite the soaring temperature. She looks into the faces of the women as they listen to her sister, their eyes downcast. She shifts her focus to the beautiful hills beyond, the land that will become her home. So much space, so much colour, hope and promise. So why does she feel the walls of a concrete building closing in on her? "Are you okay, Livy?" Magda has joined her on the crate.
"I'm fine, I think," whispers Livy. "It's just that sometimes it's like I'm still back there, you know?"
Magda nods. "I know. We've moved continents, put seas between then and now, and yet..." Her voice drifts, but Livy understands. They are still under the same sky, and their memories are woven into their flesh. It will take more than the soil of a new earth under their fingernails to feel safe again. As the summer's heat intensifies, so do Magda's feelings for a young man working on a nearby site. Walking home one evening, Magda is unusually quiet. "Is something wrong, Magda?" Sibby asks.
"No."
"You have been quiet for a few days now. Are you ill?" Sibby persists.
"If you must know, I've been talking to a boy," Magda says, bright red.
Sibby and Livy stop walking.
"When?" Livy demands to know.
"A while now."
"And? Are you in love?"
Livy is equal parts shocked and delighted.
"You know, I think I am," replies Magda, beaming.
"His name is Yitzhak, just like grandfather's."
"When can we meet him?"
Livy asks, thrilled.
"Sibby, you even know his sister. She lives across the road from you," Magda teases.
"That is so funny," Sibby bursts out laughing. "Yeti told me she had a handsome brother who she wanted to introduce to my sisters. But now we don't need to set you up because you've done it all by yourself."
Sibby is thrilled. Her responsible middle sister is in love.
"So, when can we meet him?" Livy repeats.
"Slow down. We haven't known each other that long," Magda says, in no hurry to pander to their intrigue.
"Okay, we'll slow down, but you're not getting any younger, Magda." Sibby's eyes twinkle mischievously.
"We're going for a walk later. He says he needs to talk to me."
"He's not slowing down, is he?
He's going to ask you to marry him. I just know it.
Livy is beside herself. From the living room window, Sibby and Livy watch their sister walk towards a tall man with dark wavy hair. He has a green blanket tucked under one arm, and he's smiling. That smile tells the sisters all they need to know. It's the look of a man in love. Livy and Sibby sigh in unison as the couple head off on their walk, hand in hand. Yitzhak leads Magda to a small park not far from Sibby's house. They stand beneath an orange tree, its ripe fruit threatening to drop any second. The sunset mimics the deep tones of the oranges poised above their heads. Yitzhak kicks away the fruit on the ground, creating a space for them to sit, before he shakes out the blanket and lays it on the grass. Magda sits down and takes up an orange from the ground. Sliding a nail over the dimpled flesh, she lifts it to her nose, its sharp, sweet scent returning her instantly to the kibbutz. "You said you wanted to talk to me," Magda prompts. She feels suddenly shy with this man, and she can barely meet his eyes. "I do, Magda," he says. "There is something I need to tell you before I ask you a question." Yitzhak takes the orange from her, and Magda looks him in the eyes. "My sister has told me all about you, and Sibby, and Livy, and your time in Auschwitz." "They were in the camps much longer than me," says Magda. "I was there for less than a year." "And you all survived the death march," he continues, and Magda nods. Yitzhak is the one to look away now. "I am so sorry that you and your sisters were in that evil place."
"Well, we're here now. And that evil place is behind us."
Yitzhak rolls up the sleeve of his shirt to reveal a tattoo of numbers. Magda's mouth drops open.
"You were there too? In Auschwitz?"
"I was there with my brother, Meir."
"And you survived too,"
says Magda with a grin. But Yitzhak is not smiling. He looks worried. She waits for him to say something, but he has fallen silent, staring at the numbers on his arm.
"What is it, Yitzhak? Is there more?"
"It's difficult to explain. I heard your story from Yeti.
It was awful. The worst story I have ever heard.
I can barely understand how you were all so sane, given what you had to endure."
"We had each other," says Magda simply.
"It wasn't like that for me."
Yitzhak looks away into the distant edges of the parkland.
"You weren't in a holiday camp. You were in Auschwitz," exclaims Magda. "No one had an easy time of it. You mustn't compare our experiences. Please, Yitzhak, it will drive you mad."
"How can I not, Magda? My brother and I survived because we were cooks. We prepared meals for the SS, and what they didn't eat, we did. I don't remember ever being hungry."
"You feel guilty for not suffering as much as my sisters did?"
"I do," says Yitzhak fervently. "Very much so."
Magda reaches for his hand. She understands this feeling.
"I know how you feel. I was living at home with Mama and my grandfather for 2 years while my sisters suffered. Can you imagine how I reacted when I saw them again? I was healthy, and they looked like they were dying."
"But still..."
"But nothing! My sisters won't let me feel guilty. There is nothing I can do to change what happened in the way it happened. I'm learning to live with it. But this is what I truly believe. You and I survived, and that's all that matters. We all survived. How we did it means absolutely nothing. We're here now, in our promised land."
"Are you saying your sisters would forgive me?"
"For what? Having a full belly? Do you think we wouldn't have swapped places with you in a heartbeat, Yitzhak? There is no honour in suffering. That's what I'm trying to tell you." Magda's eyes flash as she speaks, and she knows her words are for herself as much as this tall, kind man. Thank you for telling me your story. It makes no difference to how I feel about you. Yitzhak squeezes Magda's hand.
There's more, he says.
Go on, Magda says warily.
I was married before the war, he tells her, looking up into the orange tree.
A lot of people were married before the war. Mishka was too.
Sibby's husband.
I didn't know that. Not only was I married, Magda, but I had two little girls. His voice breaks and his face crumbles.
Oh, no. I'm so sorry, Magda whispers.
I lost them in Auschwitz.
Magda draws closer to Yitzhak and gently wipes the tears from his cheeks. His eyes meet hers, and there is pain in them. But there is something else, too. Something she recognizes. Hope. No more words are needed, as Magda understands the way in which they can share their pain and grief. Yitzhak leans across the space between them to tuck the wayward strands of Magda's hair behind her ears, a smile slowly forming on his mouth. Right here, right now, thinks Magda, is where we found each other. I said to you that there was something I needed to tell you, and a question I had to ask you.
So, the question? Grins Magda.
Magda Mela, will you marry me?
Magda looks over his shoulder as the last rays of sunlight disappear. A full moon is already in the sky, shining its pale light on them.